this episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast.
Your deal here, you've actually pretty much finished the refurb by the time you're completing, which is phenomenal. And then you've got tenants moving in 10 days later. That's amazing.
Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Jason, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Not a long journey for you guys from, 20 minutes away, I'll say?
Yeah, that's all. Just 20 minutes.
Fantastic. Well, welcome. Thank you for sharing your time with us. Can we kick off with a little bit about your pre-EPP journey? So what was the life of Michelle and Jason like before you came into EPP? What was it, 7 weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
We signed up on the 5th of May.
Awesome. Seven or 8 weeks ago. What was it like before then? What had you done in property? What skill sets did you have? What experience?
So I previously was a business analyst at Egg Bank. And then when that closed down in about 2011, we'd got three young children. So then I stopped working. So I've been a housewife since then. But with regards to property, when we met, I'd already got a house. We kept that, rented that out. And then when we'd always been interested in property. And then in 2011, we were like, right, are we going to do something? We'd watch programmes like Property Ladder with Sarah Reedy.
They make it look so easy.
Yeah, exactly. And we had a passion for it, definitely. So we were like, right, let's do it now. So we were fortunate enough to get a house at a reasonable price from auction. And we completely transformed that. And then we flipped it and made about £15,000, which we were happy with. And then we continued to try and buy properties from auction, but the whole demographic of the people that had started to buy from auction had changed. People weren't getting anything from their pensions. So there was a lot of sort of the older generation there trying to make their pensions work better for them. And it became more and more difficult to buy a property at a reasonable price so that there was a profit margin in it. Because if you're going to live in your house, you don't need that margin.
No, absolutely.
So you could actually buy properties cheaper on Rightmove than you could at auction. So that was sort of that. And then we kept going to auction though. And we ended up buying a property in 2016.
Yeah. So you bought one in 2011 and then your second one in 2016.
Yeah, exactly. So we were doing it in a very traditional manner. Bought it in 2016 and we renovated that and kept that for a few years. And we sold that. Did we sell that a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then about 5 years ago, we bought another property that was actually tenanted. We bought it from auction. So we've got a tenant in it when we took it over and they're still there. And we got it for an okay price. And then we bought another one about 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Also from auction, also tenanted, they're still there. So that really has been our property journey. So it wasn't moving very fast, as you can see. And now our children are older and I wanted to get back into work. I'd always wanted to have my own business and it was kind of like now or never.
Yeah.
Really.
Good on you, because I've seen loads of mums that have been out of work for a long time actually not be brave enough to get back into it. I think it's really a hard thing to overcome. So good on you. And I've seen how hard you've worked over the last 6 or 7 weeks. So you've certainly jumped in with both feet. So in a nutshell, you started 9-10 years ago and have bought four properties over that period, sold one. No, flipped two, actually.
Yeah,
flipped
one. We kept one for a while, for about 2 years. And then we decided to sell that.
Awesome. And so coming into the partnership then, you'd bought four buy-to-lets, but you only had two left.
Three
left over. So you bought four, sold one, and kept the three. Fantastic. And how did you hear about us, just out of interest?
I was looking to do something and there was a franchise exhibition on at the NEC. We just decided we'd go. I never really thought about property being a franchise, if I'm very honest. It was something I thought that you just sort of did by yourself. And we went, and it was just at the start of COVID.
I remember it well. It was like tumbleweed. Although, and all the storeholders in the NEC were saying, you know, we've paid the same money as normal, but we're seeing 10% of turnout. But the really interesting thing is everyone who made the effort were serious, because all the tire kickers didn't bother coming. So so you came to that famous last expo before the NEC like closed. Everything else was closed, and we were the last little show. I think
it did. Yeah, I think we'd lost a bit of faith, haven't we, in the fact that we were struggling to find a way in, if I'm honest,
to property.
Into property, yeah. So although it was something we wanted to do, we were a little bit of a one-trick pony, I guess, in the fact that we were struggling to find, you know, we knew that the price that you bought at was so important, and we were being priced out of lots of auctions. As Michelle said, we went to a lot. It wasn't that we only bought, we did only buy that amount, but we'd been to several, and we'd probably lost out on double, treble, quadruple that amount.
Really?
Yeah.
Ones that we were ready to buy, that you bid on, done your due diligence.
We've done our due diligence. We went, we had our number, we didn't get carried away, we agreed that the numbers were. We may have gone a little bit over both of us on a couple of times, but not by a lot, yeah. Mm. As Michelle said, we'd made a decision that actually maybe we needed to find something else to do as a business.
Yeah, so you went to the franchise show looking for a business.
That's right, a business.
Because property wasn't getting you there quickly enough.
Well, in fairness, we weren't educated enough, I think, to understand the other opportunities that were there.
Yeah.
To open our eyes to different ways of, different strategies, different ways of purchasing or advertising, or actually, you know, gaining the trust.
Mm. And you're absolutely right. You make or break an investment when you buy it. If you buy wrong, it can take decades to repair and of course, if you don't have the luxury of time, if you can't feed money into a bad investment, then you can come unstuck as well. So I'm glad you didn't get carried away, because you could have sunk a load of money in and got completely unstuck. So congratulations for that. Looking back, what kind of a discount do you think you're getting on those properties? So overall, over the four, generally you get a discount at auction. You know, in the cold light of day, if you'd got them valued by a Rick surveyor, what kind of a discount?
10%,
sort of,
So that's about 10% discount, which really is retail with a bit of a discount, isn't it? Yeah,
as Michelle said, the challenge we had, we were then up against people that wanted to buy it for themselves, also, you know, and then also against, I guess, even less experienced people who just wanted a return on their money. Yeah. They didn't worry about any capital growth. They just wanted to income.
And if they're comparing it against money in the bank at 0.5% interest rates, you can't compete. And it's like, wow, I'm getting 4%, yay.
and we realised very quickly that, and in fairness, the auction house started to put the fees up astronomically as well.
When we first started going to auction, but by the time we finished going, say, a couple of years ago, because we haven't been since then, it was packed, and there was people standing at the back, and there was no room.
It was wall to wall.
The whole auction houses have changed completely in the last sort of 5-6 years, definitely.
Yeah. Don't worry, it's going back to how it was. go in a couple of months' time, and you'll have plenty of seats.
When Pride Park car park, Derby County car park is full.
For an auction.
You know you're slightly in trouble.
It reminds me of when the 3% stamp duty came in. People were paying 5, 7, 8, 10% above in order
to save three
to buy before. And I remember looking at it thinking, that's crazy. But it's the emotion that you know, I'm buying at auction, so it's really, really exciting, and I'm going to get a deal. And actually, no, you can pay well over the odds. So that brings us to 7 weeks ago or a bit before. So when we actually met, we must have met in March in the NEC, at the NEC.
Yeah.
So what was your journey then? So from March at the NEC, you said you came on board 5th of May. Is that right?
So we did the one-day training course on April the 23rd.
Which was emblazoned a seminar. Excellent.
And then we signed up and did the proper training day on the 5th of May.
Excellent. So you kicked off your 4-month trial on the 5th of May and have since come on board as partners. Brilliant. So 5th of May when you started, which, yeah, seven and a bit weeks ago, what changed? So previously you worked full-time, Jason. You got quite a full-on job. So this is mainly your gig, Michelle, is it?
It is. Yeah.
So
it's my
what,
full-time job.
It's your full-time job, yeah. As well as looking after the house and the kids, yeah. Dealing with lockdown, yeah. So Slack, checking Slack every day. What did it look like before your property job? So what were you doing? And how's that changed since you came on board?
So we do rent all the properties ourselves. We were just looking after those, you know, doing the gas certificates and making sure the rent was in, stuff like that. Now we are really motivated. It become very still, hadn't it? We weren't really thinking about it so much. But since being on the partnership, it's definitely changed my mindset. And I'm sure it's changed Jason's. It's like... it feels now we can achieve so much more than we could previously when we were investing traditionally, because there's so many different strategies on the partnership, and we are just at the forefront of it. You know, we're just starting out.
I think that, you know, so really we had probably one string to our bow, yeah, which was, well, when's the auction catalogue coming out?
Mm.
Yeah, well, there might be two auction catalogues. Yeah, what's on there? And it would be hit or miss if there was anything in there that we thought was of any use that we could, in the price band that we could look at, I guess. So, as Michelle said, you know, we've completely changed our belief in, you know, what we can achieve by you know, looking at the what the other team, the rest of the team have achieved.
Really. Mm.
And I guess it inspires you to think, wow, okay, hold on a sec here. And we've said this numerous times in the last... sort of 2 months or so. So what have we been doing? what were we doing for the last however many years? You know, we were just, you know, to be fair to ourselves, just like dipping our toe in the water.
Mm.
You know, we thought we were doing okay, as Michelle said, you know, picking up the odd house here and there for maybe 10,000 below market value. And then cash flowing it. And having to wait 6 or 7 months to get our money back out if we were lucky in remortgaging it or whatever else it might be. You know, we couldn't move at pace at all.
Mm.
And I guess what this, you know, what the partnership has shown us is there's lots of different ways to be able to use your money wisely and get much better value out of it.
Yeah, I think that pull effect, if you want to call it that, of others in the community performing at a really high level has such an... It's like peer pressure, but positive peer pressure, isn't it? Why am I aiming so low? I think that has a massive impact on people, especially people. And this is why I've introduced you on the podcast. You know, you're in week 7. We've had people that are in year 4. So that people can realise... wow, that's what's possible. I can turn everything around in 2 months. Like, you're talking like different people, aren't you? And I want to ask you about that, actually. Before, pre-EPP and post-EPP, pre-EPP, what were your goals in property? Where did you think you'd be in, I don't know, 5 years' time, as an example? Had you even thought about it?
No, because that's another thing. It's really made us focus on the future.
Mm.
We've never had 5-year goals or 10-year goals. And really driven towards something, so that's something new for us anyway. But I suppose in the back of our mind, it was like, well, we'll buy a property every couple of years, and we'll then save another deposit, and then and do that, and never really striving to make anything out of it, just enough just to provide some income, but not to actually be a proper business,
which, to be fair, is a phenomenal way of building a pension pot for yourself, because you've done 4 over 10 years or so, another 2 in the next 5 years. If you just kept buying at that kind of rate, 1 every 2 or 3 years, by retirement, you're still young people, you'd have a great portfolio, your leverage on those, if you didn't refinance them all, would be fairly low given that capital growth will go up. So I think that traditional investing approach is actually really solid. You'd have a great lump of equity that you could sell. You'd have a great income because your mortgages might stay at 250, 300 quid a month, but the rents in 20 years' time are going to be a grand a month. So it's a really, I don't want to knock traditional investing, but I'd be interested to know what your goals are now. So where are you now? So let's assume you're going to continue the same, like you said, two properties in the next 5 years. What are you now thinking over the next 5 years, given that you've just come on board as partners? So you've committed to 5 years. So I'm hoping you're not going to say two more properties, Frank.
In the next 12 months, we want to buy 8 properties.
Fantastic.
Ideally, we'd like to flip 2 of those and keep the other 6. And within that, we want to have some properties with high monetization strategies attached to them.
Yeah, fantastic.
That's the key for the next 12 months.
Just out of interest, what do the ones that you had over the last 10 years, what do they bring you in per month net income?
We are netting £1,000 a month.
So about £250 a property. Yeah, excellent. So are you aiming for that to be the same? Are you aiming for that to be higher? What are you thinking from the 8 you're going to source or the 6 you're going to keep this year?
Well, probably I would imagine 5 will be just normal ASTs.
Yeah.
And then 1, a HMO or something like that. We're really keen to get involved with Stepping Stones.
Excellent.
So potentially.
We'll be able to help you with that for sure. Yeah. So your single STs will be about 200, 250 a month, I would have thought, net income. And then your HMO, 500 bottom grand a month, top end. So yeah, so you're taking that from a grand a month up to £2,000 to £3,000 a month, which is a massive increase in a year, given that was your first 10 years, wasn't it? So fantastic. So what has changed in your daily investment? On the partnership, we talk about a sausage machine. We talk about what we put into the sausage machine and what we get out. What has changed in terms of what you're putting in? And a really interesting spin on this I'd like to ask you is, what have you been able to take from your careers? So what skills have you found really easy that you've got, Jason, you've got, Michelle, and what have you had to learn? 3 questions all in one. Yeah. I'm a teacher. I should know better than to ask. You should rabbit in headlights. Michelle's like, I don't know what to answer now. Yeah. Can you ask me one at a time, Chris?
So I tell you what, in the straight way, let me answer what I've seen different in Michelle.
Ah, that's an interesting one. Yeah.
So I think that's important. I think that, you know, Michelle, before we decided that Michelle would support the children and I'd keep working, she's very ambitious person, and obviously over time that's a challenge. Yeah, so you're ambitious, you want to get on with your career, you're building your own way, and then you have to make a decision to be able to split that up if you want to be able to give a lot to your children when they're growing up. So I guess what I've seen in the last sort of 2 months is that spark back from Michelle. So that real like energy levels that it was there before we had the children. A real desire to build a career in property, and to transfer a lot of those already very solid organisational skills, where previously I would be the one going, oh, we can do all of this, but there'd be a trail of destruction behind me trying to catch up in respect of the leads, what we've done, how would you put into a sausage machine. Michelle is brilliant from the analyst type of thing to keep us in that straight and narrow, to make us work in a much more, I guess, is, you know, in line with the practices that the partnership have got. So it allows us to work in a much more structured way, because in theory, if we're putting in, I think we had a conversation early doors, we're putting a lot into the marketing, and it was a bit like, I can't remember the exact language I used, but it's a little bit of a risk, Frank, and it was a bit like, it's a numbers game, Jace. Yeah, it is a numbers game. You're absolutely right. It is a numbers game. And actually, you know, the way that we've worked through that is, you know, how many leaflets we send out, how much advertising that we've done to drive back in, you know, prospective leads and to make that work. So the way we've tried to work it is that clearly I'm doing my full-time role. Michelle is just soaking up all of the information that's available, be that from the 10 o'clock meetings every day. And in essence, I then get a download from Michelle on, you know, so what have I missed today?
Yeah.
So I'm very much like, I'm clambering for the information, which I said, like, just tell me what we'd, and to be fair, it's the amount that we've learned in 7-8 weeks is ridiculous.
That's amazing.
And we cannot, we can't remember it all. Yeah. We're not going to be able to, but we've got, we're already talking in different language already in respect of what is achievable, and more importantly, we don't know the answers, but we know people will know the answers.
Yeah.
So we're not worried about not knowing A, B or C, because actually people will have done A, B and C.
Mm.
Yeah. And so basically all we have to do is be able to ask the question and somebody will go, or leave you know the answer, will go, actually, have you thought about it like this?
Mm.
Yeah. So,
The collective IQ is amazing because if you were doing that by yourself, it would take years and years even to get 10%.
It did take me years. The funny thing now, though, is my level of understanding, my level of sophistication, going through the roof as well, because 10 years ago it was just me, and so every mistake I made, and there were plenty, I would learn, and I'd speak to this lawyer, and I'd go to this networking event, and I'd pick up these little tidbits. But if you imagine a graph, then I had 3 franchisees, and then I had 10, and now we've got, I think we're at 57 as of today. That's 57 people taking action, doing deals. They all have obstacles, they all have issues, which means, and we talk about the collective IQ a lot, it's just getting bigger and bigger and more and more experienced and better power team, lawyers that couldn't really care less about Joe Bloggs, who's going to do 6 deals this year, really get excited. Well, we had one of the best lawyers, best conveyancers in the country, come and speak to us last month. He doesn't go and speak to every group, but he's happy to come and speak to us because there's 50 plus people that he knows are going to do a lot of deals this year, so he's well happy to come and invest an hour of his time in sharing some of his best practice. So yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it, that collective IQ. So it's not only the encouragement and the peer pressure, but also the hard knowledge of, guys, I've got a problem, what do you think, or anyone come across this yet, what are the ideas, what's best practice?
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, I used the word peer pressure. I just see it as,
I mean, that in a positive way.
I see it as total belief.
Do you?
Total belief. So we sit there and go, okay, so the system works, whichever way you look at it, the system works. There are people out there every single day doing deals. We have a number of limiting beliefs,
we all do.
But we walked away from the franchise going, okay, interesting.
The franchise show was this?
That sounds interesting, but impossible. Right, we'll come to the day.
Let's
open your mind to the art of the possible, I guess.
Mm.
To think that it was possible to purchase our first house at, well below, so it was 63%, sorry, it was 63, so 34% below market value.
Is that your first deal?
Yeah.
We haven't even come onto your results
yet.
No, sorry.
But my limiting belief was nobody in their right mind would sell their house to you for that price.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well,
unless you're hoodwinking them or cheating them, or there's some jiggery pokery going on. Yeah. Exactly, you can't possibly honestly do that. Yeah.
No. And I don't know. But that deal is, they are very happy with the support that we've given them to get them to where they've got to today. So.
And even your language there, the support we've given them. You're not talking about buying their house.
No.
You're talking about helping them with a problem, and they pay you in equity, don't they? And we talk about that a lot in the partnership, and we've talked about that on the podcast. It's a very professional, very niche, very unusual service that we give our vendors. There are very few people in the country that can help them in the way that you're helping those particular vendors right now.
Yeah.
And because of that, they're happy to pay you 34% of their property's value to solve their problem, which is awesome. Yeah, I'm delighted, guys. It's had such an impact on you. We still get people now go, how's it a franchise? Surely you're just showing people to buy property. It can't possibly be a franchise. And you think, well, describe a franchise. There's a model to follow. There's, you put this in and you get this out. And there's all of this infrastructure around it. And for the people that, and people come to the franchise show, hear exactly what you heard and walk away, never to be seen again. In fact, I was I was doing a presentation. I've talked about this guy before. At some point, he might come up to me and go, "That was me. Can you stop talking about me?" But he came up to the. So I do some presentations for the at the franchise show, and I do a half an hour presentation. And the hook for that is, "Would you like to know how I bought a hotel for a pound?" And I was just setting up, and the sound guy was putting the mic on my collar and stuff. And he came up, and he had a pushchair, and he said, "What's this all about then, mate?" And I said, "Oh, I'm presenting on how to buy a hotel for a pound." And he said, "Oh yeah, I'll have three of them," and walked off. And I thought, do you know what? You think it's a joke, you think it's impossible, but for you, it always will be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if that's the mindset, I'm like, oh yeah, whatever, and I'm on my bike. And it's like, but you didn't. You had, you know, doubts. You had a healthy skepticism, but still investigated, and still, and you're reaping the rewards. So awesome. I know I scared you, Michelle, with the three questions, but if I can come back to one of them. So what's changed for you? So you were presumably looking at the catalogue when it was coming out. You had your one marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. You've already talked about one deal that you've got going through. How have you achieved that? I'm sure there are people sat here that, you know, they're either in their careers, they perhaps want to get out of their careers because they've gone through lockdown, they're liking homeschool, they're liking family life. They want to make life-changing decisions. They've got an interest in property. What has changed for you? Because I'm sure there are many people that have done the last 10 years and thinking, that isn't a long way towards replacing an income, let alone two. What's changed for you?
I think previously, as you said, we got a catalogue and we looked at it, and then we tried to buy that way. But since we've joined EPP, then the system is very structured. And therefore we follow the system, and by doing that we reap the rewards from that. So for example, previously we didn't do any marketing. We now market. So we send out 5,000 leaflets a week. We also advertise in local newspapers.
Yeah.
We contact stale properties, so people who've had their houses on the market for 6+ months.
Yeah.
We contact those as well.
Brilliant. So three marketing, is that it? Three marketing strategies?
It is at the moment.
Yeah.
We have more, but we're just trying to master those.
Absolutely.
Before we move on to
following the system. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. You don't want to try and do all 10 at once. Yeah. You get no penetration with it. Yeah. Excellent.
So that's the main difference, that we have a structure.
So you started that. When did your marketing start? How many weeks back?
6 weeks ago we started marketing.
Brilliant. So you've done 30,000 leaflets.
That's right.
You're in how many newspapers?
And we're in two newspapers, so one 6 days a week, and then one just comes out weekly.
So 7 or so adverts a week in newspapers, and then you're writing letters to stagnant properties on the market. Brilliant. And what have your results been?
We have had, to date, 51 calls.
So these are vendors responding to your adverts saying, "I'm interested in selling to you," is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly
great,
right.
Great stuff.
So we've had a chat with them. On the telephone using the EPP script.
So I bet you're getting good at that telephone fact find now. I bet you can do that without a script.
Yeah.
And do you do that, Michelle, or do you do that, Jason? Whose responsibility is the call?
Jason does more of that.
Do you? Okay.
Because I'm too busy organising everything else.
Although when the forms come back in, Frank, after the phone call, I do have to get, Michelle has to get a bit of a download on the form.
Right. Like, is that your scribble?
Yeah. Yeah. So what have you offered? How many bedrooms are there? What's the phone?
Yeah. So you've done about 30 and I've done about 20.
Okay. Oh, so you are both learning how to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you've had 50 odd vendors, mm-hmm. leads from that marketing, which seems pretty good, if I'm honest. That seems about bob on for what we'd expect.
Are we getting about 8 calls, are we, per 5,000 leaflets?
About 8 calls per 5,000 leaflets, which is pretty good. Just out of interest, where have the majority of your leads come from? How many have you had from newspaper?
Four
leads from 6 weeks of newspapers. Mm-hmm. And then how many from direct letters?
Two.
How many letters have you delivered?
About 80.
So two. Ah, you're not far off. So these are actually almost... bob on the averages. So you can expect about a 5% return to direct letters. So you're not, so two, you could easily have another two or three from the final 20. So you're not far off, you're at about 3% return at the moment to letters. Newspapers, you'll look at it, don't this bit of coaching for you here in front of the in front of everyone. Don't stop too early. So you might look at it and think, oh, it's too slow. You know, leaflets are flying. Leaflets, it hits their mat and they phone you or they don't. The majority, not all. Some people want to see a leaflet a few times. In the newspaper, most people want to, they want to know that you're there. The way they gauge your reliability is, are you there? That's why you're in every single episode of or edition of the newspaper deliberately. So they go, oh, they're still there. They're still there. And you'll start getting more calls in month three, month four, month five, because they get that reassurance from you, especially if you consider who's buying newspapers.
Yeah,
it's typically exactly. older people. It's typically people that have, so you're the new guys and you need to become a, oh yeah, they're reliable now. So yeah, you're about bob on with your conversion rates, which is good. So from 51 calls, did you say? 51
yes,
calls?
51, yes.
How many of those vendors have said, yes, I'm interested in that?
We have had four.
Four have said yes. That's great. Right. So that's, yes, I'm interested. So on that first call, you're making a below market value offer. What's your business model? What are you offering BMV?
Up to 75%.
Up to 75%. So they're giving you a value on the phone and you're saying, great, we can pay up to 75%. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. And then you've had four people say, yes, I'm interested in that. And you've booked to go out and see them.
That's
so you've
right.
booked your health visit. How many of those have actually gone ahead?
Two.
Okay, so what's happened with the two that haven't? Because that's unusual. We're seeing it more in lockdown and post-March. But what have the reasons been? What have the circumstances been? Not breaking any confidentiality, mm-hmm. but just generically.
So for both of them, the potential vendors were both elderly.
Yeah.
And for one, her niece called and cancelled it.
Yeah.
And for the other one, her daughter called and cancelled it.
Right. Yeah. And it may, those people still need to sell, but you can understand a protective family worried about their health, financial concerns are probably going to come secondary to health concerns. I wouldn't be surprised if those people come back to you. Have you followed the system in terms of dropping them a letter? And yeah.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it for a second. So those people have stored those letters. They'll have them once the government changes the rules and they lighten up. You may well have those people come back to you. So you've actually had two help visits. And what have the results of those two been?
One went ahead. And excellent. We are currently in the process of purchasing it. In fact, I'm hoping that it's going to go through this week.
Brilliant. You're thinking it's going to complete this week?
Yes.
Congratulations. Wow.
I think so.
Oh, it's really, I mean, that would be really quick as well. Yeah. So that would be literally, so I think 4 weeks is Wednesday.
Yeah.
Since you did your sign up.
So we're recording this on a Monday.
Yeah.
So 4 weeks would be, yeah, so that'd be 28 days then on Wednesday.
Given where we've been in literally just lifting lockdown.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and in fairness for us as well, literally starting from scratch.
Yeah, so for the listeners, we're on the 6th of July today.
Yeah.
So we've just come out of lockdown. And this is the thing, people were saying, oh, property market's frozen. And I was thinking, we're still signing people up. We're still completing on stuff. We're still having desktop valuations on every part of the purchasing process. We're still going ahead. And so you actually started. Yeah, if you started 5th of May, you've known no different. It's just going to get easier and easier for you guys. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, so we're literally from a standing still start, which, you know, we are, you know, there was a lot going in. Mm-hmm. To like understanding the system, getting our solicitors, getting all the things lined up, just takes time initially.
And understanding the EPP process and making sure you're doing it right. I mean, there's so much information, but I think you have to choose what you want to learn. Eventually, I'm hoping I'll learn it all. but you have to just look at what's key to you and what you need to be aware of and understand at that particular point.
And you only have to know the next step, don't you?
Yes.
You only have to. So I remember you phoned me saying, right, we're going out to see this vendor tomorrow. I was like, great. So where have you got to? Are you taking a mentor? No, we've decided to do this one on our own. Do you remember the phone call, Jason?
Yeah. I do remember the phone call, yeah.
So there's one hiccup, Frank. You tell us the hiccup, because this made me chuckle.
The hiccup was, as the process is the vendor gives us the price, yeah?
The value of the property.
The value of the property, yeah. So he valued it at 100,000.
On the telephone.
On the telephone.
Yeah.
To which, obviously, I then said, great, to offer our service, we can pay up to 75%. So that's going to, so we can give you 75,000. So he was very happy with that and said that we could, we arranged to go around in a week's time. However, then when we did our evaluation of the property, unfortunately, I think two doors away had sold for 76. So therefore the value was not 100, it was closer to 76,000. So you're absolutely right. We had a conversation which, right, okay, so we're going to see him. Unfortunately, it's not 76 anymore. Sorry, it's not 100 anymore.
So it's 75% of 76, yeah. Which is low 50s,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. So 50, yeah, we're 57 or whatever we offered. So we went in, we built rapport. It was during lockdown, so we rang them on the way. We went to Starbucks, we picked up the takeaways, we took the coffee in. It was a vacant property as well, so it was challenging because...
Can't sit down, they can't make you a cuppa.
He was very emotionally attached to it as well, and we chatted for... I'll be honest, it felt quite a long time, in fairness. It felt longer than the 20 minutes, 25 minutes that we were building the rapport. Maybe not for Michelle, but it did for me, because it's our first time, yeah? It was tricky, and
we just went for the practice, didn't we, really? Because in the end, we were like, I seem to remember
you were thinking it was a... Yeah. Dead duck, because how can someone go from 100 to sub 60 in a week?
You gave us the advice, we followed the process, which is build the rapport, then advise them of why the price is the price. So we've done our research, we've got the tools available to us. We did a report on, did we do a Write Me Plus report?
Yes.
Yeah, so we did a Write Me Plus report with him, so showing the values around the area, how we got to the valuation, how that would be the value that an official Rick's valuation would come back with.
Yeah.
And then said to him, on that basis, I'd be able to offer you 57,000 for it. Fully expecting, if I'm being really honest, to go, thanks, but no thanks.
I thought it was 75%, not 60%. Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah.
So, to which, you know, and then we followed the system, which is, can we have a look around? So we give them time to digest the 57,000. We walked around and it needed some work because it's been empty for a couple of years. So it needed some new carpets, a back door, a bit of a refresh. And I came back and said that I valued the refurb would be 7,000.
Right.
So then I offered him 50,000.
Yeah.
So we'd gone from,
100.
100.
To 75.
Yeah.
To 57. To 50.
To 50.
Yeah. I hasten to add, because I'm sure people listening might be thinking, wow, this sounds like a real, you know, you say this and then you say this and it's just getting worse and worse for the vendor. But I hasten to add, this is all done with the utmost of transparency. On the phone, we do say, what do you think it's worth? 100. We'll be able to pay up to 75% of that.
Absolutely.
When you went out, you said, actually, the others have sold for 76. I should say, on the phone, you also say, is it in a good lettable condition? And he would have said, no, it's been empty for a couple of years, in which case there'll be some works for us to do, but we'll price those up and those will have to be deducted. So it is all very open and transparent. And so when you sat down with him, you then said, look, I can only value it at 76. Is there a reason why these are selling for less? And he said, no. So it's very open then. Well, this is what the bank's going to value it at, 76, which means we can pay 57. Let's have a walk around. And you priced the works at about 7. So you offered him 50, did you? Is that where you got to? Yeah. Which, psychologically, from 100 a week before is a big jump, isn't
it? Yeah, and I think what we talked about previously, I think one of our limiting beliefs would be that wasn't a possibility as a conversation. And I guess we went in there with a different mindset, in fairness. We'd had a couple of conversations with some of the other partners. Yeah. I had a conversation with you on the Wednesday before we valued it, went there on the Friday.
Yeah.
And we agreed that, you know, we'd go and have the conversation and see where it took us.
Yeah.
And in the end, we managed to get the work done a little bit cheaper.
Have you? So have you already done the works?
So, yeah, so, and again, part of joining the partnership, we would have never believed that we would be able to. The house was empty.
Yeah.
So Michelle, I agreed the price from on the phone. Michelle then went back with one of the other partners.
Yeah.
On the Wednesday.
With a mentor.
Yes. Yeah. And signed up the deal.
Brilliant. So just to give the guys listening a bit of an idea of timeframes, what day did you speak to him? What was the first contact? Or when did he phone your office? When did he phone your telephone answering service?
So it was a Friday,
and you booked for the following Friday, did you?
Yeah.
So you got Friday to Friday. Mm-hmm. So Friday was the telephone fact find, and then a week later was your help visit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you offered him the 50 then. Did he say yes there and then, or did he want to think about it?
He owns it with his brother.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So he's power of attorney, but it's his mum's house.
Oh, okay.
So it's him and his brother that are
going to... Oh, is it a probate sale, is it?
Yeah, it's a probate sale.
Sure.
So they're going to split. He wants to go away and speak to...
Okay.
His brother.
So when did he come back to you on that once he'd...
We signed up that day. So we left at 10 o'clock in the morning.
On the Friday. Yeah.
He called me at 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
To basically say that he'd spoken to his brother and he was happy to do the deal.
Brilliant.
Could we do anything on the price? Yeah. I said that we'd speak to our team and see what we could get the refurb cost to.
Yeah.
And then we rang him back and... I rang him back on Friday evening and he agreed at 53.
53, so you gave him three back of the...
I gave him two and a half.
Could I have
53?
So you did 53, cool. So you went up to 53, okay. And then you went out the Wednesday following with the mentor to sign it up. Fantastic. And we are... and then it's 28 days this coming Wednesday. And you're looking for simultaneous exchange of completion?
Yes.
Yeah, brilliant. So that should...
And the refurb will be done.
We've just got the decorating and the carpets to put in.
Brilliant. So what have you already done between signing it up and completion? Because that's all on his dime, isn't it? He still owns it. So it's all positive cash flow for you once you complete.
We sorted the garden out, which was quite a jungle.
Right.
We got the children involved in that.
Oh, did you go and do some of the work yourselves?
Yeah, we did that ourselves. We've got two sons. And they came and helped us. Yeah, we had to pay them.
The trickiest bit, Frank, was actually getting to the tip with the amount of garden waste.
Because they didn't believe it was personal use.
As I rocked up on the first Saturday, it said only one visit a day.
Right.
And I looked at Aaron, our eldest, and he went, how are you going to pull off this? We need to be back here at least five times today. Like. Anyway, we managed it. On the third time we went, by this point, the bouncers had arrived. I don't know if you've been to the tip.
No, not recently. No. Everyone clearing the houses out?
Well, they basically have got two bouncers.
Wow.
So he knocked on the window and Aaron went, how are you going to pull this off? As we wound down the window. And he said, mate, this is your second time? And I thought, it's actually the third time, but let's not negotiate.
Yeah.
And I just went, any chance you can let me back in for one more run?
Yeah.
And he was like, he looked at me and went, okay. And so he let us back in, and then fortunately in Sheffield, which is our area, there was another tip.
As he could get another, he did it all over again.
He was 25 minutes away. Okay. So we had to do another run. So that was the hardest bit of the
year in the house. There were challenges during lockdown that we've never come across before. Like exactly. Buying materials became like gold dust, didn't it? It was fascinating.
Yeah, so the garden's the first bit.
Then we've had to have a new fuse box in, so that's done. And a new back door. And then they had the polystyrene tiles.
On the ceilings,
And although it's not a legal requirement at the moment, from a safety perspective, and we thought it would be better, so we've had those taken down. And now we've just sorted out the carpet today, so that's going down in about 10 days.
Brilliant. So you get the paint
decorated in between.
Now, brilliant. So it'd be ready to market as soon as you...
We've already done that.
We've already rented it, Frank.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. So when did you start marketing it?
No, we didn't market it.
No.
Oh, okay.
They called off the back of one of the leaflets.
Really? You had a tenant phone off one of the leaflets? Yeah. Oh, that's
so... They were like, if you're buying a house...
Yeah, can we rent one?
Surely you've got to have houses to rent as well.
Yeah, and you said, funny you should say that.
So is that they rang on week one, did they? Week one or week two, the leaflets?
Yes, and we hadn't got the house. So we were like, oh, we haven't got any at the moment, just there, where they wanted to.
And this one happened to be in that same area.
So I rang her just a few days after we'd done the deal.
Mm.
And just said, look, we've got a house. It needs a bit of work. So...
So when are they moving in? Have you lined that up yet?
Yeah, 20th when? Of July.
Wow, so you've got that lined up. So, sorry, I've got to work this out. This is brilliant. I didn't realise this deal was this slick for your first one. People get to this level of systemization on like deal 10. So when did you have the telephone fact find or the help visit or the sign up? What date have we got that we can?
So the sign up was the 10th of June.
So the vendor agreed on the 10th of June.
No, they agreed on the Friday prior to that.
And then you started the ball rolling. Okay,
yeah,
so that's
the help visit. It didn't sign up that day.
Gotcha. So it's about the 5th of June was your help visit when you made the offer.
Yeah.
And they said yes.
Yeah.
And then you've refurbed it.
Yeah.
You bought it, refurbed it, and tendered it
mm-hmm.
by the 20th of July, which is... Is that 7 weeks or something? That's amazing. Good on you guys. That's so efficient. And people look at it, and I've seen this with clients, and I've seen this way more with non-clients. People look at that and they go, "Well, yeah, it's neat. That's good." But what you don't realise is, over 8 or 10 or 12 properties a year, that has a phenomenal impact on your cash flow. People don't realise that the gap between completion. Starting to do your work. So if you do it wrong, you get all your workmen in week one after completion. They fit the works in for 2 weeks later. They do the works, take a month. Then you start marketing. Takes a 2 weeks, 4 weeks to find tenants. They have to give a month's notice. And before you know it, you've got a 4 month gap where you're losing money, hemorrhaging money. And people go, "Oh, it's not a lot. You know, it's 500 quid a month or something." 500 quid a month on 10 properties a year, that's 500 quid a month times, you know, if you're doing a property every month, that's £2,000 a month that you're losing in some months unnecessarily. And if you look at your deal here, you've actually pretty much finished the refurb by the time you're buying it, which is phenomenal, and by the time you're completing, and then you've got tenants moving in 10 days later. That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. So the gap between completion and tenants moving in, given that you've got a 3 or 4 week refurb there, is 10 days. That's awesome. Congratulations on a first deal. It's great.
Thanks. I guess it's the key undertaking. Even if the house was empty before, there's no way we would have...
What? Did you not know it existed? Did you not know...
We would have dreamt of doing it, Frank.
Right.
We would not have dreamt of doing
it. Yeah, it's not on your radar, is it?
No. Exactly. We talk about things we've learned.
Yeah.
And that's a real simple thing, yeah?
Mm.
But to your point, worth a lot of money. And that's down to the trust... that we built up with the seller.
Can we talk about the seller just mm-hmm. for a minute? Because I'm sure people listening, and one of the reasons I invited you on is because all this is novel to you 2 months ago. So it's good to, because I think we sometimes get a bit, "Oh yeah, do a key undertaking on that. Yeah, an exchange with delay completion for 10 years. Like, what? How? Why?" So the vendors have allowed you to go into their house with keys, knock it about, put new doors on, you know, empty the garden, that before you've paid them a penny, maybe paid them a pound, the option agreement. Why? Can you like tell us a bit about the relationship with the vendor? Like, what situation, without breaking any confidentiality, mm-hmm. what kind of situation are they in? Why are they paying you 34%? What's the property value roughly? Oh, we said 76.
Mm-hmm.
So 34% of 76. What's that discount? 23.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
76 to 53. So that £23,000 that they're paying you, why?
I mean, in essence, it's been empty for 2 years.
Yeah. On the market?
No.
Okay. They were going to let it themselves. That was the idea, to do it up. The lady works full time, and the gentleman, he's a full time carer to his mum, who has dementia. So you don't have time when you want to, you know, have a social life as well, and you've got those responsibilities. You don't have time to do that. So they didn't do it, and now it's actually starting to cost them money.
Mm.
So I think they have to pay double council tax.
Because it's empty.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's been empty for 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's literally just kicking in, I think. And I think that was quite a big stimulus for them. And I think what's been really important to them is the speed that we can move at.
Mm.
Because when we first spoke to them, we said, hopefully we can do it in 4 weeks. With COVID, it may take 5 to 6 weeks. But I think that's because they are hemorrhaging money from it now. I think that's been a really important thing for them. And then we've built really good rapport with them as well. Like as Jason said, and they had a key cut for me. They said, "Oh, you don't need to keep coming around to our house. We'll just get you a key cut." So they got me a key cut, I contact them probably at least every other day. I drop them a text. Normally, it's about what we're doing to the house, because at the end of the day, they still own the house.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm like, "Oh, we're going to put a back door on this day. Are you okay with that? We're going to do this. Are you all right?"
Not leave it off for a couple of days.
Yeah,
exactly. Little things like that. Yeah.
I think just really respectful of the situation.
Yeah, and that just reassures them. If they didn't hear from you for 10 days, they'd probably be nervous. They'd be going around, having a look, starting to have doubts. Because what you have to be mindful of is what's going on in the background. What, you've given them the keys, but they haven't paid for the house yet. You know, all that is going on. And oh no, she phones me every other day, she drops me a text. No, these guys are solid, you know, is the conversation that's going on in the background that you don't hear.
I think that just accentuates the rapport that we do build, and how that's a key thing with EPP, about how you build the rapport and trust curve.
Absolutely, in such a short period of time, from leaflet, never heard from you before, to here's the keys, you crack on. Yeah, it's remarkable. I think in probate, the cash flow issue that we sometimes overlook is, if someone's not got a lot of money, sometimes they're the people that are inheriting the estate don't have a lot of money either. They have to actually put their hand in their pocket to pay for the funeral, etc. So they're cash flow negative on that straight away. But then they've got property with equity in it that they can't access. And like you say, it costs them council tax, costs them utilities probably. Then they've, on top of the funeral expenses and all that potentially, and then they're paying double council tax. It can become quite a burden. Mm-hmm. And there's not loads of equity in there, is there? If it's, you know, there's, as you say, £23,000. So fantastic, guys. And I can hear it in your voice. You're gaining confidence that you've done a good thing here. You've helped these vendors to move on. The massive confidence boost, in my experience, is when they refer you to someone else then. And they go, "Here's Jason and Michelle. They've bought from me. Go have a chat with them." And it will come. If you keep serving your clients like this, it will absolutely come for you. So, fantastic. I just want to finish off by asking what you would do differently if you went back to March. So having met us in March, is there anything you'd do differently than you've done over the last few months?
I ask you to put the course on the next day.
rather than wait 6 weeks.
Having to wait 6 weeks.
We only run them every 2 months. Exactly. So you almost had the longest wait possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that 6 weeks waiting for the course was actually...
Yeah, we were really keen. We were like, "Oh, it still isn't here yet."
So I don't know. I don't think we would, Frank, to be fair. We followed the system and we were aggressive with it as well. So we were really fast. We were as quick as we could have been at the blocks, as far as I'm concerned. You know,
it's not a loaded question. I can't see loads of mistakes you've made.
So I look at it and go...
I'll give you one, actually.
Okay.
He'd accepted 50 and you went up to 53.
Maybe, thank you. But it was our first deal. You're right. It was important to him that he got a deal.
Yes. Yeah, and you've given that to him.
And I gave that to him. Exactly. So
speed was of the essence, wasn't it?
I did a podcast recently, actually, where I said, if you take on a mentor, and I know this isn't a mentor-mentee relationship, but there's elements of it, play full out. For the time that you're testing your mentor out, if you don't actually take action, you don't know how good your mentor is. Whereas if you play full out and fully participate and it doesn't go as you plan, you've then got a good test of whether it's a good fit. Doesn't mean they're a rubbish mentor, but it means that perhaps it's not a good fit. And that's one thing I'll say for the two of you. You've played full out. You've been 100. I'm just thinking, Michelle, are you on every single day, every daily support seminar?
Most days, unless I have to go and see the vendor or go to the house.
Unless I'm like actually doing a property deal. Yeah, but if you're there 3-4 times a week daily surgery, and often you're asking questions as well, which is brilliant. Interestingly, I didn't know lots of the details of this transaction, but that's because you got a property coach coaching you, one of the successful franchisees coaching you through the details. So who is it? Who's your coach?
It was Hayley.
Hayley was talking. Yeah, she's done a good job to help you get through this so quickly. So good on her. if I can offer you one bit of advice, and you've done it, but it's something that I think is so important and really easy to lose sight of as you start doing 8-10 deals in a year, and that's to be mindful of the four pillars. And I don't know if we've talked about that on the podcast before, but your first pillar of your property business, and you need all four firing on all cylinders. And the problem is the first three pillars cost you money, and it's only the fourth pillar that makes you money, and people don't get onto the fourth pillar. So the first one is your sales and marketing, which you're flying with. You're doing your marketing, you're doing your telephone fact finds, and you're doing your help visits, which is great. Then you've got pillar two, which is your conveyancing and finance, which clearly you've got going because you've got a completion lined up for this week in week four of the sign up, which is brilliant. The next one is your refurbishment and your licensing if required. Clearly you're on that because you did a key undertaking. And then finally, the fourth pillar is your monetization of it. And you've already lined up, you're going to do single ASTs and you're going to do a high monetization strategy on one, which is great. But if I can give you one bit of advice, it's when you're planning your week and when you're planning your quarter, keep it balanced between those four pillars. It's the problem is, and I don't think you guys would do this because you've been so on it with the other pillars, you know, you've recognized the value of condensing that process down. And, you know, 10 days from refurb finishing to tenants moving in is brilliant. What I've seen in the past is people have gone, bang, this is amazing, I'm going to buy. But if all you do is buy and you lose sight of the systemization of the rest of it, it becomes really expensive. So congratulations, guys. You deserve all of the success. I'm excited about your next seven this year. And you couldn't have started in a harder time, you know, middle of lockdown. You know, yeah, go buy some houses, but you can't visit them. You can't meet anyone. Good luck doing a refurb. Oh, by the way, the government says you need an excuse to sell, to move house now. It couldn't have been any harder. And the good news is, left, right and centre, we've got recession looming. You know, we've got John Lewis closing flagship stores. We've got Pret-a-Manger closing. We've got all kinds of big national companies, which is going to mean massive redundancies. I heard it on the news. Yeah, I think it might have been Pret-a-Manger actually. 1,000 jobs lost. And they said it as if it's a normal occurrence. Well, it is becoming a normal occurrence because we're getting announcements like this every day. And unfortunately, that's going to lead to people not being able to pay mortgages, needing to sell, needing to downsize, which our job is to buy property. So that is going to get easier and easier for you. So I think you've started in a really tough time and absolutely flown. So, yeah, good luck with smashing your goals moving forward. And thanks once again for coming on the podcast, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.